श्रीमद् भागवत थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 24 रिनंसिएशन ऑफ कार्डमम मुनि टेक्स 41 मैत्रेय
उवाचा
एवं समुदिता तेन कपिलेन प्रजापति दक्षिणी कृत्य तं प्रीतो वनं एव जगाम मैत्रेय उवाच एवं समुनितस्तेन कपिलेन प्रजापतिः दक्षिणीकृत्य तं कृतो वनमेव जगामः एवं समुदितस्तेन कपिलेन प्रजापतिः दक्षिणीकृत्य तं कृतो वनमेव जगामः उवाच द ग्रेट सेज मैत्रेय एवं दास समुदितः एड्रेस्ड तेन बाय हिम कपिलेन बाय कपिल प्रजापति द प्रोजेनिटर ऑफ ह्यूमन सोसाइटी दक्षिणी कृत हैविंग सर्कमएंबुलेटेड तं हिम प्रीतः being pacified, banam, to the forest, eva, indeed, jagama, he left, ha, then. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Maitreya said, thus, when Kardama Muni, the progenitor of human society, was spoken to in fullness by his son, Kapila, he circumambulated him, and in the good specified mind, he at once left for the forest. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, going to the forest is compulsory for everyone. It is not a mental excursion upon which one person goes and another does not. Everyone should go to the forest at least as a Vanaprastha. Forest going means to take 100% shelter of the Supreme Lord, as explained by Prahlad Maharaj in his talks with his father. Sada Samudvigna Dhyam Bhagavatam 755. People who have accepted a temporary material body are always full of anxiety. One should not, therefore, be very much affected by this material body, but should try to be freed. The preliminary process to become free is to go to the forest or give a family relationship and exclusively engage in Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of going to the forest. Otherwise, the forest is only a place of monkeys and wild animals. To go to the forest does not mean to become a monkey or a ferocious animal. It means to accept exclusively the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage oneself in full service. One does not actually have to go to the forest. At the present moment, this is not at all advisable for a man who has spent his life all alone in big cities. As explained by Prahlad Maharaj, Hittatma patam grihamandha kupam. One should not remain always engaged in the responsibilities of family life, because family life without Krishna consciousness is just like a blind well. Alone in a field, if one falls into a blind well and no one is there to save him, he may cry for years and no one will see or hear where the crying is coming from. Death is sure. Similarly, those who are forgetful of their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord are in the blind well of family life. Their position is very ominous. Prahlad Maharaj advised that one should give up this well somehow or other and take to Krishna consciousness and thus be freed from material entanglement which is full of anxiety. Sri Maitreya says, thus when Kardama Muni, the progenitor of human society, was spoken to in fullness by his son Kapila, he circumambulated him, and with a good pacified mind he at once left for the forest. So Kardama Muni is a very exalted personality. He is one of the sons of the Brahma, and he is a Prajapati. Prajapati means the progenitors of this universe. After creation, Brahma deputed different sons to fill this universe with population. And Prajapati was one of them. Kardama Muni was one of those Prajapatis. And he received Kapila Dev as his son. And although he was the father of Kapila Dev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kardama Muni recognized the elevated position, the extremely elevated position of his son. And in due course of time, he was instructed by Kapila Dev, the Supreme Lord. And then he prepared himself to go to the forest. So in this work, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that everybody actually should accept the life of Balaprastha. The human life has been divided into four orders. Those four orders are Brahmacharya, Garbhastha, Banaprastha and Sannyasa. Out of these four orders, three are actually meant for the renunciate, or three are renounced orders. Brahmachari, Banaprastha and Sannyas. These three are renounced orders. Only household life is the life of material entanglement. That is allowed in the Vedic society in order to maintain this universe. But actually the goal of human life is not to indulge in different types of sense gratification or indulge in different types of materialistic activities, but to prepare himself to become free from the bondage of this material nature and go back to the spiritual side. That is the goal of life, and the Vedic society actually has been designed to accomplish that goal. In the beginning of creation, Krishna actually gave this instruction, how one can become free from material bondage and go back to the spiritual self. But when one is in the household life, he develops a lot of entanglements, a lot of attachments. Because this closeness or intimate relationship naturally makes one attached. When a man gets married to a woman, no matter how big a woman hater he may be, he ends up becoming attached to her. Because the association builds that attachment. Because the living entities are living entities have emotions, different feelings. So, and when there is some reciprocation, a human being naturally feels those emotions, and as a result of those emotions, one becomes attached. What to speak of wife, people even become attached to their dogs and cats. And so this is material life, especially household life. And especially when people associate with one another for such a long period of time, that attachment becomes very, very strong. And this attachment is very detrimental to one's spiritual progress. If one wants to get out of this material nature, then he must be free from this attachment. He must first of all become free from that attachment. Otherwise, the living entity will come back, even after death. If a living entity has some attachment to this material nature, he'll have to come back. Therefore, the goal of human life is to become free from all material attachments. And the Vedic culture, in the Vedic culture, the learned scholars and thinkers and the devotees of the Lord were aware of that fact. But in one hand, the goal of human life is to become free from material bondage, but at the same time, the material nature is very entangling. And as long as one has some attachments, he has to come back. So therefore, Vedic society taught human beings how to become free. Therefore, they used to begin their life, at the very beginning of their lives, they used to practice detachment through sense control. Actually, attachment is our sensual indulgences. If we allow the senses to run towards the objects of the senses, the attachment becomes inevitable. We become attached to so many different things. There's a saying, for at least when I joined this one, I was told that one is even attached to the lamppost in the corner of his house, or in the corner of the street where he lives. And it's so true, like, although we never think that we are attached, but we have such deep attachments. And this attachment is due to long association. Therefore, the Vedic society trains people up how to remain detached due to self-control. Jai Shri Shri Nitai Gaurna. taught human beings, civilized human beings, how to control his senses and thus reduce his attachment. Because a person who doesn't indulge in self gratification, he won't become attached. A person who is not attached to his senses, sense perception, if he doesn't become attached to what he sees, what he hears, what he touches, what he smells, and what he tastes, then there won't be any attachment. Therefore, the Vedic culture actually dealt with the root of the cause. And the root cause is actually sense gratification. So the Vedic culture taught in the childhood how to conquer their senses through the practice of brahmacharya. And then they used to enter into household life. And because they had a good upbringing, they usually did not get involved in household life so badly. But still, whatever attachment developed due to one's being in the household order of life, one used to sever that attachment by accepting vanaprastha order. Vanaprastha means one used to go voluntarily leave his house and go to the forest. Why one used to go to the forest? Because when one is in such a circumstances, one is bound to depend upon Krishna, bound to remember Krishna. Like, can you imagine, like, you're in the middle of a forest, you don't know which way you're going, you don't know whether there will be any food to eat. And then at night, you know, the place is filled with wild, ferocious animals. Have you ever been alone in a strange place in the middle of the night? How do you feel? You're afraid of snakes, you're afraid of wild animals, you're afraid of ghosts. And then you're forced to think of Krishna. One is bound to become dependent upon Krishna at times like that, provided he has a knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, when we are in a comfortable situation, secure situation, we tend not to think of Krishna. We always chant his name, but we don't actually call out to him sincerely, earnestly for helping us. But if we're in a dangerous situation, then we become forced to depend upon Krishna. The Prabhupada is saying that one must go to the forest, in at least in the Banaprastha order of life, because that then he will be forced to depend upon Krishna 100%. In the forest, we don't have any security. We don't know whether we'll have any food to eat. We don't know whether there'll be any water to drink. And we know that then we really realize that padam padam jati padam natesha, that there is danger at every step. We don't know whether the next step we take, whether we're going to step onto some black mamba. And if we do that, then it's finished. In the middle of the forest, you won't get any treatment. Even when you're in the city, you may get some anti-venom injection and you may get some. You may be saved, but in the middle of the forest. So when we realize that how dangerous this material nature is, then we are bound to depend upon Krishna. And human life actually is meant to depend upon Krishna. But then Prabhupada is pointing out that for people, those who have grown up in the cities, it will not be possible to go to the forest. It's not practical for them to go to the forest. If there are some people who lived in forest, for them it's not so bad. And in the Vedic time, people were used to that kind of situation. Like when they were brahmacharis, they used to stay in the Guru's ashram, which used to be in the middle of the forest. Then they had to go to collect wood in the forest and different necessities from the forest. So they were used to forest life to some extent. But the modern Kali Yuga living beings, they are the products of machines and cities. they won't last in the forest. Instead of depending upon Krishna in the forest, they'll die of heart attack on the very first night. So the whole mission will be lost. Therefore, Prabhupada pointed out that actually it is better that they join ISKCON temple. They move into ISKCON. Instead of going to the forest, let them come to the temple and become detached from the family life. Actually, in the age of Kali, people are very, very unqualified. People, those who can handle the forest life, those who can last in the forest, they don't have the intelligence. Like there are many people who are living in the forest, especially in Africa. But they don't have the intelligence to understand Krishna consciousness. And those who have the intelligence to understand Krishna consciousness, they can't stay in the forest. So that's the paradox of this Kali Yuga. Therefore, it has been suggested that, okay, fine, you don't have to go to the forest. But at least you give up your household attachments. Move out of your house. Don't stay with your family till the last day. It's a very painful existence, actually. To depend upon people. Even if, nowadays, the close relatives become disgusted with old members of the family. They actually, at the depth of their heart, they wish that better this guy died. He's causing so much distress. We can't go to the movie because of him. I have to stay back home. I can't go out with my husband. So this way, in the age of Kali, people have become very, very heartless. In one hand, people are very attached to their family life, but the family members, they don't care for the old members. In the West, of course, we have the old men's home. No one actually takes care of old parents here. Very, very rarely. Only sometimes some devotees do. But Kali, completely out of the question. And they put their parents in the old man's home and let them die there. So, that is the situation of this age of Kali. And in one hand, the old people don't want to leave their home and the young people don't want to take care of their old parents. So much so that I remember once in Calcutta, there was a very old, very wealthy, but old man, and who came to the temple, he used to come to the temple. So one day he came to the temple with his sons and daughters-in-law. And our temple president there, Abdul Haran Prabhu, he was preaching to him. And he was telling that old man, "Why are you still staying at home? You just leave home and come to the temple." But the man was not responding. Sadhu just started getting on his case. Started telling him, "You're an old man, you know, why are you staying at home? Any day you'll be dying." And still the man was not saying anything. Then Adri just told him that, "And you think that your children care for you, they love you, and that's why you must stay at home. But I can tell you, they don't care for you. Actually, you're a big burden to them." And then his son and daughters-in-law were there, and he started saying that, you know, they don't care for you. You're an old man, you're actually an impediment to their instant gratification. They're young, they want to enjoy, but you are just a pain in the neck. And they don't care for you. And the man, he actually looked at his sons and daughters-in-law, hoping that they would say, "No, that's not true." But they didn't say so. And that's the case with most of the people in this age, most of the holy people in this age. No one cares for them. And then they face their death without an iota of Krishna consciousness, without any understanding of Krishna consciousness. And they don't know how to face death. When they see the Yamadutas, they don't know how to handle it. Then what they do, they call out to their relatives. They think that their sons and grandsons are going to save them from the Yamadutas. And they do call out, although no one can hear, they actually, in the subtle body, they call out, "Help, help! My son, my daughter, my wife, my brother, please you all come." And although they're just sitting next to him, they don't hear him. And they don't see how the Yamadutas are pulling this guy out of his body. He's struggling, he's an old man, he can't even lift his hand, lift his finger and digest his food. And he wants to resist the Yamadutas. But the Yamadutas are so powerful. He doesn't, you know, as it is, in one hand he is weak and the Yamadutas are so strong. So they just drag him out of his body and pull him to Yamalaya. And this is how they face death, in total ignorance. Now, is human life meant for that? No. Human life is meant for some higher purpose. And the human life actually is meant for becoming free from this material bondage. And the only way we can become free from material bondage is by remembering Krishna at the time of death. Because death is the time when the door to the spiritual sky opens up for us. As long as we are in this material body, we are actually bound to so many needs of the body. Because the body's attachments are very, very difficult to free, become free from. But at the time of death, we are actually free from the bondage of body. Therefore, at the time of death, we must remember Krishna. If we can remember Krishna at the time of death, then we can go back to Krishna Loka. But in order to remember Krishna at the time of death, we have to practice when we are alive. Therefore, human life actually is meant for cultivating Krishna consciousness. Because only by doing that, one can become free from material bondage. Otherwise, there is no way out. No way out. At the most, one can be elevated to some higher planetary system that has some refined sense gratification, or more intense sense gratification. But that's about all. Kshina punya martya lokam vishanti. When his piety is exhausted, he'll again fall down to the material. But the real freedom from this material misery is to go back to the spiritual sky. And the only way we can do that is by remembering Krishna at the time of death. Therefore, we must take full advantage of this process of Krishna consciousness. Actually, we shouldn't have any doubt about that, because in Srimad Bhagavatam and all the other Vedic scriptures, that has been very, very definitely pointed out through various examples. When we see so many great personalities actually have accepted this path of Krishna consciousness in order to become free from the material bondage forever. So we must follow their footsteps. It's a natural tendency, it's an intelligent thing to follow a great man. Because if we follow a great personality, then we also derive the benefit. Or by following a great personality, we learn how to properly lead our lives. Now, when we say great personalities, we don't talk about great in a material sense. Like, in the material platform, the so-called great personalities are those who are very wealthy, those who are very famous, those who are very powerful, etc. But on the spiritual platform, the great personalities are those who have accepted the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. The real greatness of a man lies in his becoming dependent upon Krishna. So more and more dependent upon Krishna, the more one becomes elevated. And that is actually the symptom of greatness. So we learn to follow the footsteps of the Mahajans. Mahajan means great devotees of the Lord. And you can see all the Mahajans, they have done that. They have made the ultimate goal of their life to remember Krishna. The ultimate goal of their life, the ultimate objective for them is to remember Krishna. And by doing that, they have gone back to the spiritual sky. So, in order to go back to the spiritual sky, we must follow their footsteps. And the milestones are there, like if we want to drive from Johannesburg to Durban, what do we do? First we find out the direction from somebody who has traversed the path himself. Then also while going, we see the indications saying, yeah, Diagon this way, Diagon this way. And if by following the signs, we ultimately come to Diagon. Similarly, when you want to go back to the spiritual sky, we have to check those indicators or check those signs. And that is given by the scriptures. In the scriptures, scriptures are pointing out whether we are on the right track. Therefore, it's so important for us to read the scriptures. And if we regularly read the scriptures, read Prabhupada's books, then we will automatically see whether we are progressing in the right direction. Therefore, books are so important. And when we move in the right direction, then in due course of time we are going to reach our ultimate destination. And someday we all are going to die, and we must remember Krishna at that time. If we can do that, then our life's mission will be accomplished. But it's not going to happen accidentally. We have to prepare ourselves for that. And if we prepare ourselves when we are alive, when we are strong, then when the time comes, we will be ready. And actually there is no guarantee when it's going to come. It can come at any moment. Therefore we have to always be prepared. Therefore we must always be Krishna conscious. So if the time comes now, then okay, let me fix my mind on Krishna. There was this king, Kartangya. He got to know that he had only a very short time left. Actually he fought for the demigods and against the demons. He was a very powerful king, so he fought for the demigods against the demons. And the demigods, after conquering the battle against the demons, they were very pleased with Kartanga and asked him, ask for any boon. We'll grant it to you. Ask for any boon. And so he was an intelligent person, Krishna conscious person. So he asked, tell me, when I'm going to die? So they said, only 48 minutes left of your life. So he just immediately came back to the earth planet and fixed his mind on Krishna, left his body. So at least he was fortunate that he knew that he had only 48 minutes left. Parikshit Maharaj also is another person who knew that he had only 7 days left. Similarly, if we could understand how many years or how many months or how many days or how many minutes are left of our life, it's actually a great advantage when you know that, well, at that certain point, at that particular point, I have to remember Krishna. So now, let me just prepare myself. So since we do not know when death is going to come, we must prepare ourselves in such a way that when it comes, we will be prepared. When it comes, when the time comes for us to leave our bodies, then we are prepared to leave our body. We are prepared to go back. We are prepared to remember Krishna and go back to the spiritual sky. And that is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. We are here in ISKCON to prepare ourselves for that moment. It doesn't matter for what reason we have come to Krishna consciousness. Some of us may have come being artha, being distressed. Some of us may have come due to our need for money. Some of us came becoming inquisitive about spiritual life. And some of us may have joined after thoroughly understanding Krishna. But whatever may be the reason, goal is to become Krishna conscious. Our goal is to become pure devotee of Krishna. So we must remember that that is our ultimate goal, and we must not deviate from that goal. Everything else is secondary. And therefore it is irrelevant or it's meaningless to try to make nice adjustments in the material age. Our goal is not to make nice adjustments. Of course, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is the Supreme Proprietor. So when devotees become engaged in Krishna's service, Krishna takes care of his devotees. Krishna provides his devotees with all the necessities. Therefore, a devotee never suffers, although apparently it may appear that the devotee is suffering, but actually for a devotee there is no suffering. Krishna always takes care of his devotees. And devotees do not undergo any kind of scarcity. Devotees always have in abundance. Then again, from external calculation, it may seem that the devotees have so little. But the devotees are so Krishna conscious that no matter how much they have, they always feel that they have enough. They have more than enough. So in this way, the living entities are actually situated at the lotus feet of Krishna through pure devotional service. And Krishna, the Supreme Father, always takes care of the devotees. Therefore, devotees are carefree. Devotees know that they don't have any difficulties at any time. So if they have surrendered themselves unto Krishna, Krishna will take care of them. And they are simply trying to prepare themselves for the time when they are going to give up their bodies. Hare Krishna. Today also is the appearance day of Radha Kunda. Now it may sound very strange, what's the meaning of appearance day of Radha Kunda? After Krishna killed Adishtasura, who came in the form of a bull, Vrishabhasura. Vrishabh means a bull. So this demon came in the form of a bull, and Krishna killed the demon, Adishtasura. Then after killing the demon, when Krishna came to the gopis told Krishna, Krishna, you have become sinful. Because you have killed a cow, so you have become sinful. So we can't deal with you. So then Krishna said, so what should be done? They said, well, we have to, somehow or other, we have to get rid of this sin of killing a cow. So Krishna said, okay. So he immediately struck the earth with his heel. And immediately, huge reservoir of water. There was the earth caved in because of Krishna struck the earth with his feet. With his heel rather. And in that cavity that was created by Krishna's heel, all the holy places, holy rivers appeared, and they all started to offer prayers to Krishna. So Krishna took his bath and in that river, in that place, in that kund, or pond. So that is Shampu in Vrindavan. So the gopis, they are pretty amazed to see Krishna's activity. So they felt that now Krishna has done something which is really amazing. Now we must also reciprocate. Otherwise we will be defeated. So they all got together. And they decided, okay, we will also dig a pond to match that. So they took out their bangles from their hands, and with the bangles they started to dig. And that became Radha Kunda. And there also Radharani invoked all the holy tithas and holy waters to come. So they all appeared there, and they started to offer their prayers to Srimati Radharani. So that is Radha Kunda. And that happened today, on this particular day. That's why today is Radha Kunda's appearance. Hare Krishna, Jaya Shri Prabhupada. Oh, does anybody have any question? Yes. Well, in a way it is true. In last few years, actually, oftentimes when devotees became sick, especially in the West, in Europe, when devotees became sick, they send them home. And it's very insensitive. We must remember that actually devotees are our own people, and we must take care of them. We should not keep them only when they're fit, and then we'll send them home when they're sick. So this is all due to our deviation from Krishna consciousness. Actually, when devotees don't understand the philosophy, they act in this way, in such irresponsible way. But when we understand the basis of Krishna consciousness, then they'll never act like that, they'll never do things like that. So, and it's happening, like last year in the GBC body, we actually discussed about that, how the elderly people should be taken care of in our society. And ultimately we are going to grow old. We all are going to grow old, and then if they send us back home, then what will happen? Like, we don't have any link with the homes, with our so-called homes anymore. And anyway, it's happening gradually. In different places we are opening up health care centers, clinics. Like in Mayapur, I'm trying to set up a Ayurvedic and nature care clinic. And gradually we can also develop facilities for elderly devotees, sick devotees. And when they see that we take care, then the old people also will have confidence and then will come. If we preach properly, then Lakshmi will come. If we properly preach, if we properly exhibit Krishna consciousness, then we won't have any scarcity. And also, these kind of programs can bring in a lot of money also. But one disadvantage we have right now is that when we have so few devotees, and we are just struggling to maintain our temples, that it's very difficult to start something like that. But it will happen. that awareness, that consciousness is there in the minds of many devotees, and in due course of time it will happen. Money may come. There's so much money that even though if governments also see that we are a very sincere and dedicated welfare organization, then the governments also will give money for us to, or they will even give us their hospitals, their other institutions to us to run. Because they can't run it properly. Now, another consideration is, if we get them now, can we really run them? Oftentimes we can't even run our temples. So, Krishna someday will give us the whole universe, provided we can handle it, we can manage it properly. Krishna will not give it to us, unless we become qualified. So it's a matter of becoming qualified.
Well, you were saying devotees are in difficulty, but we see on the former Soviet Union, many of the devotees are put in labor camps and prison camps, and some of them even died, you know, in the labor camps in Siberia.
One devotee died. Yeah, I mentioned that, you know, apparently it may appear that they're suffering, they're going through difficulties. But actually a devotee doesn't go through the difficulties. But Krishna guides him, Krishna helps him. These difficulties are actually relative. Like for example, say, let us consider a devotee who is dying in a labor camp. Right? Now, first of all, the condition of the labor camp actually made him very, very Krishna conscious. Right? So when he was then dying, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came and took him by his hand back to the spiritual sky, was he suffering or was he in excess? So the external condition is not the important thing. It's the internal condition that's important. On the other hand, we can see one man, he is living in his palace at the time of dying, surrounded by, 25 doctors and, 6 dozen nurses, right, all being cared for. Now he's dying. Now, externally he may be in a very nice condition, but look at his condition at the time of death. The Jamadutas came, put the noose around his neck, right, made sure that he's tight enough, and then started dragging him out of his body. So externally he's in a very good condition, but internally? Distresses because in distress she was more close to Krishna.
Or when the good time comes, she will forget Krishna. So devotee doesn't want externally comfortable situation. A devotee wants more and more distress. Because, of course, this is not a, you know, like, it's, we should be careful that this desire is Krishna conscious. And actually, when we become strong enough in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will put us through our distress and difficulties to make us more Krishna conscious. But if Krishna puts us in difficulties now, then we'll root. So Krishna knows our condition. So Krishna sees when we are prepared to accept those difficulties. When you are ready, when you are prepared, when you are strong enough, then Krishna will put us through those difficulties. But ultimate consideration is Krishna knows what's good for us, and let's just accept whatever He is putting us through.
In the Vyasa Gautama, it was in Sridhar Swami's conference. He said, Prabhupada said that Krishna tested me by taking everything away, and Krishna tested me by giving me everything.
He said that one must have a lot of trust because it's attached to family life. Otherwise, you cannot be delivered. So if one leaves his body before approaching around the hospital, you can't go back home and die.
See, for a devotee, it's a different consideration altogether. These orders, they were actually not. They were meant to bring one to the platform of pure devotion. But a person who is in pure devotion, it doesn't matter in which order he is in. Like which order was Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj. So these orders are actually irrelevant. Prahlad Maharaj didn't have to become a sannyasi to become a pure devotee. He didn't have to go through Banapas. You know, from the womb of his mother, he was a pure devotee. So when one becomes a pure devotee, then it doesn't matter where he is. But if one was in a household life, and if he was not properly trained up in Krishna consciousness, then it would be difficult. Can you imagine, you know, what to speak of house, being in household life? You know, all these people all over the world, When they die, what happens to them? They're completely at a loss. They don't know how to handle it. Because they don't have any awareness. They don't have any education. At least we are fortunate. Not only we are fortunate, we are extremely fortunate that we know what to do at the time of death. At least we know what to do when we see the Jamadutas. They call out to Krishna, and that will be a real pure chanting at that time. Any other questions? Okay, all glorious. Oh yeah, no,
I just wanted to ask, if someone is living in Vrindavan with his family, he's really attached to his family, his wife and his children, and then he dies. Does he go back to God? He goes to Goloka.
Ultimately, it's all a matter of his consciousness. You know, if he is in pure consciousness.
But even if one is living in the dharma.
Even in the dharma, it's difficult to say, you know. Like so many Muslims are very mindful. You know, when they die, what happens to them? I mean, it's difficult to say.
Oh, they make offenses also.
And nowadays, of course, there is an enormous benefit, spiritual benefit in dying in a holy dharma. To be able to die in a holy dharma also is a big, you know, spiritual fortune. And what to speak of, you know, those who are living in this Vrindavan.
There are Muslims living in Vrindavan.
Awesome. There. Well, the question is, you know, whether we are really looking for someone authentic. Like, the hippies are living in the mountain caves, right? Yeah, but the thing is, the point that I made, or the point that Prabhupada made in the purport, we don't have to stay in a mountain cave, or we don't have to go to the forest in this age. And the safest thing to do is to move into ISKCON temple. And, you know, like, even if the ISKCON devotees go and preach to them, with those who are living in mountain caves and, you know, sincerely waiting for someone to come, you know, they don't recognize when the devotees go to them and preach to them. They don't know actually what real spiritual life is. So how will they recognize when the spiritual personality comes?